Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. In this episode, I got to jump on a call with Victoria Garcia, a personal brand photographer who runs a thriving business right here in Houston. If you've listened to many of our other episodes, you'll have heard me talk about Victoria and her business as she was generous enough to be the first official sponsor of Houston Made. I was happy to promote her business because I personally benefited from her work, and I really believe that if you're a small business owner or an entrepreneur out there, there's a good chance she could help you out. Beyond that, I knew I wanted to feature her as a guest because she's found a unique niche and has an incredible passion, not just around photography, but entrepreneurship as well. I very much enjoyed our conversation, so listen in as Victoria and I discuss how her journey in photography began with shooting and developing her own film in high school, how she found her niche in an incredibly diverse industry, and how investing in your own business is key to building credibility as an entrepreneur. Victoria Garcia, thank you so much for joining us here on Houston Made. I'm thrilled to have you on as a guest. So genuinely, thank you.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Why don't you just, before we get into it, explain and start kind of what you do, what your business is here in Houston. I know that there's a couple facets to it, and then we'll go from there.
So I am a personal branding photographer here in Houston. I work with small businesses to help them show up online and market and advertise through the power of photography. And recently, I started educating other photographers on how to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think that that's super cool.
Thank you.
When I think through who I want to be as a part of the show and as a guest, it's this kind of, there's this middle ground that I'm looking for. I don't really want to talk to people who, like, I mean, I guess if Beyonce wanted to be on the show, I would.
We're not saying no to Beyonce.
Yeah, we're not going to say no to Beyonce. But at the same time, like, I think through, you know, the head of Chevron. Like, I don't know, maybe I'd have that conversation, but chances are, like, the guy who is the CEO of Chevron didn't, like, make Chevron Chevron. He came in at some point. Right. But I also, so there's that side of it of people who are kind of arrived and they're bigger. They're not even really an entrepreneur anymore. They're a corporation, big thing. On the other side of the spectrum is I want people who have some experience and some things to offer and all of that. And I have a lot of friends who are just starting out in certain areas. And I really like look forward to having them on as guests one day when, yeah, you know, they've been in it a little bit, just a little while. And I feel like a lot of people like to call themselves photographers, whether or not like they're making money or how that's going is a different story. But your element of having a like separate business of also training and teaching people how to run a photography business and how to run a personal branding photography business was really interesting. So we'll dive into all of that. I did some diving onto your social media and was really impressed to find that like you had been doing photography on Instagram, proudly declaring that you were a photographer as far back as 2015, which that all seems like not that long ago,
but also
in
the life of a business.
Yeah, it feels like a minute ago. So how long have you been doing photography? What does that look like?
Sure. I started photography in high school on a 35 millimeter with a dark room and, you know, developing my own film and all of that. I was horrible. I absolutely cannot look at any of the work that I did when I first started, but just like any other art, as you grow and progress, it gets better. And so, yeah, I can probably say I've been shooting for over 20 years, 25 years now. Oh, geez.
So high school, where did you get the camera? Where did that begin as far as like photography in high school?
Sort of was one of those trial and error things. I always wanted to be an artist in some form or fashion. And I tried all the different arts, music, dance, writing, which I still love to do. And when I picked up the camera, it just felt like an extension of myself. I knew that this was something that I was going to be passionate about, and it became my art.
That's really cool. And you said you were bad. What does that mean? What does that mean? I just saw this infographic type thing that was talking about is like the progression of skill and criticism. And so it was like, at first your skill gets better than your critical eye, and then your critical eye gets better than your skill. And you go through this, these waves of, I'm really good at this. And then you're like, I'm awful at this, because your appreciation and your critical eye gets better. But then another season, like your skill actually gets better. So what did bad photography look like in high school?
Just very poorly thought out. And, you know, I was always okay at lighting and actually, you know, taking the pictures, but I had no conceptual eye. I didn't have an eye. As when I first started, I did not have an eye for what I was shooting. That took a lot of years to learn and really develop. So when I look back at my early photography, it's just, so I'll give you an example, because this is one of my sort of embarrassing stories from high school. And I think I talk about this on my Instagram. One of the assignments that we got, we had a weekend, a roll of film, take 36 exposures. And the teacher wrote on the board, open concept, right? I'm over here like open. So I go and take pictures of like an open pizza box and an open door and things that are open. And I submitted it and he was like, no, that's not it. He just meant you can take pictures of whatever you want, but I'm trying to be like artistic and, you know, like conceptualizing the word open. And it was just, yeah.
I wonder if that just means that you were actually ahead of the curve, right? Maybe. Because that's the creative way to look at it, is you, again, finding this higher level conception of open. What is openness? Let me explore the idea of openness, which is really cool. I mean, I understand looking back now, you've been doing this for some time, and there'd be some things as far as your style and your technique have gotten better. But do you have any of that photography? Like, do you have film and footage?
I have the printed images that I printed in the darkroom and developed in the darkroom. And there's some in there that are really good. I'm very proud of my skills as a photographer using a camera that you can't see. Like, you had to develop the film, so you didn't really know what it looked like. And looking back on that, that's something I can say that I'm proud of, that even shooting in that way before I had gotten to digital, the work is solid in terms of the lighting and the exposure and the aperture, you know, things like that. So even though the content was maybe a little, it still had some work to do. That was always something that I gravitated towards. The technical side of photography is why, one of the reasons why I love it, because I can be an artist and have conceptual ideas about what I want to shoot, but there's also a lot of science to it. There's a lot of technical, you're using a tool that has a lot of different settings, and you have to learn how to master those things along with developing your eye and finding a style and having a point of view.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Behind me, arms reach, I got this, which is like a crappy little 35 millimeter film camera. And I have two rolls that I've shot and haven't developed yet. Because I'm terrified of what they're going to turn out like. And then I've been doing more and more video work. I mean, it's kind of public knowledge in the sense that I've been making a lot of videos, and I've talked about running multiple businesses, but I have yet to make like a full public announcement of, hey, I've got Rusty Gates Real Estate and I'm running that, and that's working and going. And I've got Rusty Gates Media, which is going. I've got clients now, which is crazy. And yet I feel like I'm probably where you are. We're in high school where it's okay, well, I have some basic fundamentals.
Yeah.
And, but I see how far I am away from where I want to be, and the skills and the science of cameras. and the part of the reason why I'm shooting so much stuff and making so much stuff is I feel like it's the only way to learn. Like, I've got Skillshare account, but it's one thing to hear all those things, ISO, aperture. It's another thing to get out there and just make something and then be like, oh, that didn't work. Why didn't it work? And figure it out. So you start out with photography, you're doing film, you're learning both the technical side and developing your eye. At what point did the business element come in?
I went through a lot of different phases in my photography career. When I first started, and even after high school, when I was young, I wanted to be a photojournalist. One of my goals in life was to have one of my images on the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah.
beautiful photography on the front page of that newspaper. And that was something that I wanted to do. But as digital photography became more popular, photojournalism shifted and changed, and I had my son. And so that idea sort of shifted as well. And then it became, okay, this is something I'm good at and that I love. How can I make money at it? So I did, you know, family photography for my friends, and I photographed quinceañeras, and I did babies and the whole thing. And in every point, it was just like in my early artistic career, there was a lot of trial and error for what photography do I want to make a business out of? And I ended up in wedding photography and women's glamour photography. And that was my first foray into an official business that I was creating, where I was actually creating the brand, creating the pricing and the packaging, learning about how to serve my clients, and then developing the skills that those specific genres needed, right? Because how you shoot a wedding takes specific lenses and certain types of techniques and glamour, you know, in the same vein. And then after I did that for a little while, I realized that neither one of those things were what I really loved. I loved photographing women beautifully. And then when I started networking and trying to market my glamour photography business, I was getting so many requests for headshots that weren't really headshots. They were like, I need a headshot, but I really want to, you know, go to a cafe and just have it be more natural and candid. And I was like, okay, there's something to this. I'm getting a lot of requests for this. And that's when I started jumping into what kind of photography is this actually? And that's how I found personal branding photography.
How much do you think social media played in the pivot towards?
It's huge. Social media was the catalyst for a lot of it for two reasons. Well, one, more women were becoming business owners. There were more small business owners, you know, growing every year anyway, but also in the women in business space. And then, you know, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're seeing constantly like Instagram influencers and lifestyle photography, because how do you take pictures of your life and make them look nice so that you can post them and share them? That's a lifestyle photo. And you have a lot of people on these platforms who are doing it for themselves. And as a business, people started to think, well, I need that, but for my business. I need that, but for my website. But they didn't have a language for it. So everybody was asking for headshots. And then when I would get on the phone, they would tell me what they really wanted. And so that informed me that there's something here that's happening. And I need to follow that trail. But a lot of it started on Instagram and on Facebook, in seeing lifestyle photographers promoting brands and promoting, you know, getting free stuff and then promoting it. And they're like, well, I could do this for my products too. How do I do that?
To go back to the beginning of the business side of it. So you start doing it for friends and building up. When you start out, are you charging people? Is it free, or are you just like, throw me a bone? And the evolution there?
A little bit of both. I did charge very nominally. But when I decided to go pro basically and to start my business in earnest, one of the first things I did was learn everything I could about how to build a business. Because one thing that I knew intuitively was that I could spend the rest of my life improving my photography skills and learning how to be a better photographer, but that was not going to help me sell that photography or market that photography or understand how to work with clients. And so the first lessons that I took were business classes on how to market and how to brand and how to create a thriving business aside from the photography. And well, yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I talked with Bob Sutton from Statesman, he and I talked a lot, I think, about this idea that anyone can do what we're doing, right? I mean, to your point, you actually have a business that is based on you teaching people to do what you're doing. For him, it was, yeah, anybody can make simple syrup. It's sugar and water. It's not that hard to combine. For me, we were talking real estate. Like, yeah, it's actually pretty easy to get your real estate license. Most people can go through the process in 2 months. But starting or turning that into a successful business is a different thing. Yes, you can get your realtor license and you might be able to sell a house, but paying your bills for 2-3 years consecutively off of that thing, that's a different challenge. And so you went straight into, okay, I'm working on this and I'm developing my photography skills, but also I need to learn how to build this business. Where were you turning? What were the resources that you were looking to sharpen those skills?
So one of the best resources that I had at that time was a platform called Creative Live. I don't know if you know Creative Live, but for anybody who hasn't, it is an online platform that was started by a photographer. And the way that it works is if you go on their website, there's four or five classes live today. You can watch them live for free. If you want to purchase them or watch them at a different time, then you buy the class and you watch it on your own time. And now they have a subscription model where you can buy a year's worth of subscription and watch at your leisure. At the time, they didn't have that. And I didn't have any resources to buy the classes. So I would just spend all day, every day, watching these classes live and just religiously taking notes. So I didn't have any other choice. I wasn't going to get another opportunity to watch the class. And I happened to work at a job at the time. I was working in oil and gas in logistics. So I was in shipping and receiving, lots of downtime.
Yeah.
Not a lot of work to do. And it just gave me a lot of space and a lot of freedom to, you know, put my headphones in and listen to the business classes. And they were all the business of photography because it was started by a photographer. So a lot of the classes were about the photography business itself. And I just learned and learned and learned. And that's, I spent 2 years doing that before I was ever able to really launch my business in earnest, because I was working a full-time job and I had kids, but I knew that my business was something I wanted to do. So I was taking clients, but they were friends and, you know, somebody would need something and I would charge them $50, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I knew that there were things that I needed to be doing, like working on my brand. I think that's where I fell in love with branding, because one of the tenets that I picked up that I still hold today is that when you have a solid brand, you are able to charge a premium price. One of the things I say all the time is strong brands make more money. And I believe that, because when you invest in the way that your brand looks and feels, then your clients are also invested in it. And you have the ability to make more of an impact with your business. And it gives the perception that you are invested. So they allow themselves to invest in you as well.
That's a really good perspective. I feel like the word that keeps coming back to me just over and over in every conversation for the last few weeks has been credibility. Mm-hmm. And to think through what credibility means and where it comes, like the science of credibility, is really interesting, especially as what I'm hearing as you talk through all of that, which is to say, part of credibility is your clients or your audience believing that you are invested in this thing.
Right.
And that's fascinating, because I don't think I'd put that piece together. I had always stopped at, they think that I'm legitimate. Like I kind of thought legitimacy, but I think there's an extra layer there to say, oh, wow, well, if he's investing money in X and Y and Z, then he or she must really be passionate about this thing. Therefore, it must be legitimate, because otherwise, how could you spend the money to do that?
Right.
I've talked about how this podcast, the idea for this podcast was born somewhere in late 2018, early 2019. And so, I mean, we're 2 years removed, to making this thing a reality and getting it out to the world. And again, as somebody who does like to try to do everything and has 1,000 ideas every day, I often will throw something out there and be like, oh, it didn't work out. But this was something that I felt like was really such a good idea and something that I really wanted to pursue and wanted to do it right, that it took that long. And a part of it was building the credibility, because anybody can start a podcast. Again, simple syrup, photography, real estate, podcasting. Anybody can do it. Literally, if you have a phone, you have a voice memo app, you can record some audio, put it like out there to Apple and Spotify, and there you go. You have a podcast. Congratulations. I really wanted people to believe that this was not just a half-assed thought, and it was not something I was doing flippantly, but rather that I really wanted to work through. So a part of that was getting really great brand photography from you so that we could build a website so that it looks really good. And when people Google it, they find it and it looks great. The other part of it was working hard to be a part of this network that we're on, Milieu Media, that the neighborhood of podcasts that we're a part of. So much of that was just, I knew Luke and what he was creating. And just to like get to stand in that crowd of people and be like, I'm a part of this, like, was really important to me. Not even from the support and encouragement and the technical support that Luke has given, which he has given all of that above and beyond, but also just to be able to say, hey, yeah, I actually have a show. It's called Houston Made, and it's on the Milieu Media like network or neighborhood of podcasts. And that's been the really like the coolest part of that is trying to create legitimacy.
Well, and I think that comes back to that is, you know, you might have known Luke and had this idea, but if you weren't serious about what you were doing, and if he didn't see the seriousness in the time, money, resource investment that you were making in it, he might not have been like, here, let me help you. Let me do all of these things. Come and join us. And especially as business owners, we know intuitively the difference between being serious about what you're doing and sort of dabbling, or like maybe it's a hobby, like it might be serious later. And when you see another business that has taken the time and the energy and the resources to invest, what you know, because you're also a business, is a big investment, whether it's brand photography or web design or marketing. We know these things are huge investments in our business. Then our clients are saying, okay, she's not just going to, you know, do this for a couple of days and then change her mind in 5 minutes. I can trust her with my investment, because they're not going to lose out on that. They're going to get an ROI on that regardless.
Were there moments of legitimacy or credibility that you experienced along the way that were turning points for you to be like, no, I got this?
Yes, there was one big moment for me, which is, I like to say this is my biggest flex. And I don't know if it's still true, but when it happened, it was the coolest thing I'd ever experienced. So I started my business very early on in the personal branding like genre, right? And so one of the first things I did was I wrote a blog called What is Personal Branding Photography, which was the highest search term for personal branding. And because of that, and because of the amount of time that that blog has been on the web, Google tracks it very highly. So if you asked, I don't know if this is still the case, but if you were to ask Google, hey, Google, what is personal branding photography? Google would say, according to Victoria Garcia Studios. And that was one of those moments where I was like, holy shit. Like, oh, excuse me. where I was like, man, this is crazy, but this is real. That felt real to me. And that's where I feel like I've gotten a lot of traction with photographers around the country, other people who are looking to get into this space, because I have been doing it for a while and I know the industry from the inside out. So that was that's my biggest flex, I think.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I was telling somebody, our mutual friend and collaborator, Haley, who with Mac Ryan Creative, who helped design the podcast art for this show and then helps you with your business and has helped me with my business quite a bit. She and I were talking about Google and she was asking if she could list me on her website as a part of her team, specifically around videography and some copywriting stuff. And I told her yes, mostly because one of my goals in life is not as ambitious as like getting on the New York Times cover, but is that whenever you Google search Rusty Gates, that it's actually not a bunch of images of Rusty Gates or redheaded guys, or like Bill Gates. Like if I can push all of those down, and listen, I'm not trying to get like super famous here. I just want to have enough presence on the internet that at least some point in my lifetime is searched through. It's just not pure Rusty Gates and it's me. That's a flex that I'm hoping for one day. But Google's a real thing. That's really cool, especially when it comes around producing content. We live in this content driven era. I was just telling somebody the other day about how I really love social media. I get that it has its dark sides. It can be addictive. If I'm developing all of my self-worth from this game, that's probably not good.
For sure.
It's definitely not good. I can acknowledge that. It's definitely not good. And yet it's a fun game. I like it. It feels like there's points and you can kind of win. And then it can really open doors. You talk about Creative Live and how that was such a resource for you as you were really preparing to launch your business and had this vision in mind that you were pursuing. For me, I had the other day where I had a question about a videography contract, and a client had, again, with real estate background, working with contracts all day, every day, I have a pretty good idea of what a good contract looks like. I'm not a lawyer by any means. And yet I had some ideas of things that I wanted in this contract that was getting made for videography work. And so I then send it to a client. They're prepared to sign it. They have a couple questions about it. I haven't been faced with these questions before. So I was like, well, I think I know the answer, but I didn't write these words. I don't know. And so I reached out to a YouTuber who I've supported for a long time. I would say he's a pretty well-established YouTuber. He made this poster that's behind me that says life's better when you make stuff. And so I just reached out to him like on Instagram. I was like, hey man, this probably is too long of a question for you to answer here, but if you have 30 seconds, here's kind of what I'm wondering, da da da. And not 15 minutes later, he responded, sent me a little message. He's like, this is what that means. Yes, do this, do it this way. Boom. Sent the I gave that answer to my client and he signed it. We were good to go. And we're off to the races. And that kind of connectivity that is available through social media, for me to be able to reach out to somebody who's been so inspiring to me, who in my mind is a total success and is famous in some small circles, and to get a response, that's huge. And it wouldn't be possible without social media. And I've said it with real estate, and I know it's true with media and podcasting, all this, like I wouldn't have been able to do these things 20 years ago without having access to people and to be able to build those relationships and ask those questions and build friendships with people who live on the other side of the country or other side of the world that can help you build your business and be that support. That's such a big deal. So yeah, thank God for Google and Instagram and all those places.
It's very powerful. And that's how I've met a lot of amazing people and great friends and business partners. And that, you know, you're right, there is a dark side to it. And I do think we need to, you know, every once in a while, take it with a grain of salt. But if you are intentional about how you use it and the kinds of energy that you put into it, I think it can be a really amazing resource. Like you said, you reached out to him with no, you know, guarantee that he would reach back out, but he did. And I think that's really cool, because when you get to a certain point where you have a lot of followers or you have a huge presence, it can be draining to respond to every person. But when you do that, you're adding equity into your own business, you know, because you're building your community of people who you know are invested in you, which I think is super cool.
And to build those relationships and those raving fans, like I do contribute to his YouTube channel. So like, I don't know if he knows, remembers that. And he's like, oh yeah, like this guy, I've got to answer every once in a while. But I've sent him a handful of messages and I don't know if he knows me. Like, I don't know how much of that is. He's like, oh yeah, that's that guy, Rusty guy. I like that guy. Or if it's just, he just was on his phone and was nearby. I don't know. I can't say, but I definitely feel like, yeah, we're buddies. And I think part of the reason why I like him so much and have followed him for so long is that his commitment to just building relationships with people and being really honest and open with his community that he has created. It's something that I absolutely try to emulate. I think it's probably easier for me because at best I'll ever be like locally well known. I think that's like the peak that Rusty Gates will ever get, is just be like, yeah, that guy, he's kind of known. He's not famous, but he's like locally well known, and that's great.
Beyonce's listening to this podcast,
yeah,
right now.
Well, Beyonce, yeah, that's that'd be awesome. My gosh. That, like, every time I think about it, I like, my brain gets so excited that I like lose my train of thought. I was like, yeah, how do I get Beyonce on here? I just start daydreaming. A huge thank you to Victoria, and thank you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. This is actually just the first half of the conversation that I got to have with Victoria, so be sure to tune in for the next one, where Victoria and I discuss how she developed her vision and values for her company, the importance of saying no to the wrong clients, and the excellent mantra of no zero days. In the meantime, I'd absolutely encourage you to go check out Victoria on Instagram at Victoria Garcia Studios, or visit her website, victoriagarciastudios.com, to see if she might be able to help you get started with some excellent brand photography. One of the biggest reasons I started this show was to continue conversations I already loved having, and my hope is that it would connect with others who are asking the same questions and seeking to learn along the same lines. So if you ever have any questions for me or for our guests, please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or to the show at Houston Made Podcast. As with all kinds of small businesses, every bit of support goes a long way. So take a moment to rate, review, and share Houston Made with that one person you know who might be interested. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection. And in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com.